Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we in the radio thing find sometimes we lose our way. And so one has to put out the call for a consultant who applies the vision thing to the radio thing and puts us back on track. So I'm glad to see that Forbes.com availed itself of the opportunity to check in with a radio consultant and kind of straighten us all out here. Mark Ramsey, president of Hear 2.0, Hear, H-E-A-R, of course, a media research firm in San Diego, sets us all straight. Quote, regarding radio, quote, "The stuff between the records is what's key. It's what separates radio from iPods," unquote. The stuff between the records. Why didn't I think of that? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody in the San Francisco Bay Area who showed up last week at Cody's for my book signing. Book? You got a book? Yes, thank you for asking. It's called Not Enough Indians. What? You think it makes a perfect Christmas gift? Boy, thank you. And if you're in the Bay Area and didn't make it to Cody's, you have three more chances to touch the hem of the garment this week, Wednesday at the Osher Marin Jewish Community Center, Thursday at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco at 6, and Friday at the Napa Valley Opera House. Okay. All right, then. And ladies and gentlemen, exactly what kind of creature is man? I think this from The New Scientist might help us all get a grip on that. Declaring that a species is endangered could be enough to sign its death warrant, thanks to the human penchant for collecting rarities. Economists have thought that overexploitation is unlikely to drive species to extinction because numbers will dwindle to the point where it becomes unprofitable to continue harvesting them. That view ignores the possibility that enthusiasts may be willing to pay exorbitant prices for rare species, rare specimens. This is just the incentive unscrupulous hunters need to track down the last few individuals, say Frank Hourchon and colleagues at the University of Paris South in Orsay, France. For example, animals command much higher prices if they are listed as endangered. Bahaba taipingensis, a species of fish nearing extinction because of its use in Chinese traditional medicine, is now so coveted that a single swim bladder sells for as much as $64,000. Yes, that's the $64,000 swim bladder. In the 1990s, more than 100 boats continued to search for the fish, despite total annual catches of fewer than half a dozen individuals. So that's exactly what kind of species we are. Nutty. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're considering investment decisions as we approach the end of the year, you might want to know this. Bob Greffield, the chief executive of the NASDAQ stock market, that's the one where all the adventurous companies are listed, so the ads would have us believe, he admitted under oath, according to the Times of London, that he did not understand how to calculate gross profit margin, one of the most rudimentary formulas in business accounting. He's in a hostile bid to take over the London Stock Exchange. His lack of basic accounting knowledge was exposed during a case in the New Jersey Superior Court. He filed a lawsuit against a company called Tours of Enchantment, which had organized a $600,000-plus reunion for his family at a luxurious castle in Ireland. Tours claimed that it charged a fee based on cost, plus a gross profit margin of 38%. Greffield claimed in his lawsuit that he understood the contract to be based on cost, plus a markup of 38%. If an item that costs $100 is marked up by 38%, it's $138. If the same item is required to show a 38% profit margin, it becomes $162. In an embarrassing courtroom exchange, a lawyer acting for Tours of Enchantment said, "Mr. Greffield, do you understand what the difference is between a 38% markup and a 38% gross profit margin?" Greffield, head of NASDAQ, replied, "No." The judge in the case ordered that the Tours of Enchantment company return masters of a DVD of the family holiday made from Greffield, but threw out all other claims. So, You want to invest in NASDAQ, just remember, they don't know what profit is. And finally, here at the beginning, maybe the last word on Michael Richards. His publicist that he engaged recently. First of all, you know, I now understand the whole Michael Richards thing a lot better because, really, ladies and gentlemen, a person will do anything to get booked on the Jesse Jackson radio program, even if you have to apologize on it. But Michael engaged the services of a publicist, Howard Rubenstein. He insisted that despite reports that had been surfacing that Richards had also had rants on stage against a woman and toward Jews in his audience at other engagements, as I say, Rubenstein insisted that couldn't be possible because Richards couldn't be anti-Semitic because, quote, he himself is Jewish, unquote. Later, Rubenstein acknowledged Richards was, quote, technically not born by blood as Jewish and did not formally go into a conversion, and it was purely his interpretation of having adopted Judaism as his religion. He really thinks of himself as Jewish, says Rubenstein. So we now know what Michael's next career move will be, an NBC reality series called Jew or No Jew. Hello, welcome to the show.
Do you realize that better than a million people cross the New York City bridges every day? The Triborough, the Williamsburg, the Brooklyn Bridge, and there's the great George Washington to send them on their way.
Manhattan, Manhattan, the silk and the satin, you see on Park Avenue there. The uptown, the downtown, the round and around town, that all the citizens do there.
There is no denying it's exciting, but I know a town that's more inviting. There have been lots of songs written about San Francisco. This is not one of them, nor do they go the way that this goes. I'm not about to tell you of her hills, or her cable cars, or her many thrills, but instead I thought I would take a chance and brief you on how she stacks up in romance. Went for a walk one day alone, down around the bay, I guess you could say that it was fate. How else could I have met my love on the Golden Gate? She strolled along the bridge and she was the cutest pigeon, gee. Did you never palpitate? Well, you'd have swooned to see her there on the Golden Gate. I looked into her eyes and foggy skies were clear. Just when I thought love was here, what a switch along came a Cadillac, it stopped, and she got him back, alas, and alack, she had a date. I finally found the love I longed for too late. I had no gold and got the gate on the Golden Gate. She would reappear, but no such luck, and now it's clear I'm a goner now. Every day I stroll alone down around the bay, I guess I'll simply chalk it up to fate. And that's what happens to you when you don't rate.
I had no gold and got the gate on the Golden Gate. I didn't have a penny, so I couldn't ask her out for any coffee. And at the Papagaya Room, I'm telling this to you so you may understand. That's what happens when you don't write. I had no gold and got the gate on the Golden Gate.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the London newspaper, The Telegraph, the two military powers in the Middle East, Sunni Muslim Saudi Arabia and Shia Iran, are lining up behind their warring religious brethren in Iraq in a potentially explosive showdown, as expectations grow in both countries that America is preparing a pullout of its troops. The Saudis are understood to be considering providing Sunnis with funding, logistical support, and even arms, as Iran already does for Shia militia in Iraq. The strategy risks spiraling into a proxy war between Saudi and Iranian-backed factions as the next development in Iraq. Saudi Arabia is considering backing anti-U.S. insurgents because it is so alarmed that Sunnis in Iraq will be left to their fate at the hands of the Shia majority. Now, this piece says President Bush sent Vice President Dick Cheney to Saudi Arabia, but other sources indicate the Saudis summoned Cheney to the visit, where they told him Iran was trying to establish itself as the dominant power. Saudis' fears are strengthened by reports that some senior U.S. intelligence officials are urging the administration to abandon stalled attempts to reach a compromise with Sunni dissidents and adopt a controversial pick-a-winner strategy. The proposal, known as the 80% solution, would favor the Shias. The Sunnis comprise just 20% of Iraq. That has been put forward as part of a crash White House review of Iraq's strategy. The Iraqi government is in danger of being brought down by the wholesale smuggling of the nation's oil and other forms of corruption that together represent a second insurgency. This from the British newspaper The Guardian, quoting Stuart Bowen, the inspector general in charge of the reconstruction, whom the Bush administration wants to zero out. There's a huge smuggling problem. It is the number one issue, he told The Guardian. The pipelines that are meant to take the oil north have been blown up, so the only way to export it is by road. That leaves it vulnerable to smuggling. He cites Iraqi figures showing the virtual pandemic of corruption cost the country $4 billion a year, and some of that money goes straight to the Iraqi government's enemies. Well, they skip the middleman. Corruption is the second insurgency, and I use that metaphor to underline the seriousness of this issue, says the inspector general, due to be zeroed out. He found that the insurgents' militias have also been abetted by U.S. incompetence. We're the can-do country, babe. Look it up. A recent audit of his inspectors found that more than 14,000 guns paid for out of U.S. funds for Iraqi government use could not be accounted for. So that's that. What about the new Afghanistan? Failure to restore peace to Afghanistan may jeopardize stability in neighboring Pakistan and have a knockoff effect on India. That's what former Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage now says, now that he's out of office. It's the Asian dominoes. Calling on the international community to pay more attention to Afghanistan, Armitage said persistent violence in that country might wreck Pakistan President Pervez Musharraf's efforts to defeat the forces of religious extremism at home, says Armitage, now 4 years after we distracted ourselves from Afghanistan to go into Iraq. Quote, I want to call your attention to Afghanistan. The stakes in Afghanistan are actually larger in the near term than they are in Iraq, he said in Singapore. Could have said it in Washington, but why bother? From the Times of London, in a devastating verdict on Tony Blair's decision to back the war in Iraq and his totally one-sided, quotes, relationship with President Bush. This is from the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. A U.S. State Department official has said that Britain's role as a bridge between America and Europe is disappearing before our eyes. Kendall Myers, a senior State Department analyst, says for all Britain's attempts to influence U.S. policy in recent years, quote, we typically ignore them and take no notice. He added he felt, quote, a little ashamed, quote, at Mr. Bush's treatment of the prime minister. He said, regarding the war, it was a done deal from the beginning. It was a one-sided relationship that was entered into with open eyes. There was nothing. There was no payback, no sense of reciprocity. Extraordinarily frank remarks, says the Times. Of this view of the special relationship. All right, so those... and there's more. One more item of news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. And it is this. How's the new Afghanistan going? Opium production in Afghanistan, which provides more than 90% of the world's heroin, broke all records this year, reaching a historic high. Good writing. In addition to a 26% production increase over last year, the amount of land under cultivation in opium poppies grew by 61%. Cultivation in the two main provinces was up by 132%. White House Drug Policy Chief John Walters called the news disappointing. Yes, indeed. You know about the Rumsfeld memo that front-paged in Sunday's New York Times. Don Rumsfeld, 2 days before he was given his walking papers, said, hey, let's rethink this whole thing. Here's my favorite part of it, deep in the story, in case you didn't plow down that far, in case you didn't put your miner's helmet on. From the Rumsfeld memo to the president, Rumsfeld seemed to see some merit in Saddam Hussein's practice of paying Iraqi leaders. Quote, it's one of his suggestions, quote, provide money to key political and religious leaders, as Saddam Hussein did, to get them to help us through this difficult period, unquote. So 4 years later, Don Rumsfeld is saying we should do like Saddam Hussein did. And Anthony Cordesman, a Pentagon official in the Reagan administration and a specialist in Middle East intelligence and military matters, just returned from Iraq. He says public statements by the Defense Department severely distorted the true nature of Iraqi force development that grossly exaggerate Iraqi readiness and capability to assume security risks and replace U.S. forces. So they're not standing up and we're not standing down. He writes U.S. official reporting is so misleading there is no way to determine just how serious the problem is and what resources will be required. Well, that's because they're busy telling us the good news. By the way, Don Rumsfeld, check the memo. Where's the good news, Don?
Why, I oughta.
Cordesman says an August 31 status report, which was sent to Congress, lists 312,000 men trained and equipped among the Army and National Regular Police in Iraq. But he says no one knows how many are actually still in service. They're trained. End of story. Oh, you mean they went over to the... Fine. He also says all unclassified reporting on unit effectiveness has been canceled. He says the Iraqi army lacks armor, heavy firepower, tactical mobility, and an Iraqi air force capable of providing support. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, the forces are fine. No, quoting Cordesman once again, no administration official has presented any plan to properly equip the Iraqi forces to stand on their own or given them the necessary funding to phase out U.S. combat and air support within the year. He says the Iraqi army could need U.S. support through 2010. I got a surprise for them. I got news for them. There's an election coming up in this country. He says attrition is put at least 20% a year. Pentagon report also notes problems with the police having ties to militias and warns about unprofessional and at times criminal behavior by some units. He describes the situation far worse with the regular police, where desertion rates are far higher than with the Army. He says there is currently no screening process to ascertain militia allegiance in people joining the police, and no method exists to track the success rate of these or other police officers. No method exists. I thought metrics was the whole deal. I thought we wanted metrics. I thought that was the idea. But apparently it's not the idea. Apparently, that's why Don Rumsfeld is skedaddling on out. Or not. Ladies and gentlemen, last week told you about the change in name of the Utah Jazz home arena to Energy Solutions Arena. Energy Solution is a nuclear waste handling agency. Given all the criticism that's happened, the owner of the Utah Jazz, Larry Miller, defends the new name, saying he researched the company and nuclear waste handling. He says low-level radiation stored by Energy Solutions is, quote, not a real threat to you. He also confirmed an escape clause for, quote, extreme situations, which permits either side to end the deal. Quote, what people don't want to give us credit for, the ones that are the detractors, is that we've gone in and looked at what they do, he said, what kind of business citizens they are, how they conduct business, what kind of jobs they create, and what kind of risks they create. His conclusion, there's a lot of stuff on our roads, our highways, and our railroads that are more dangerous than low-level nuclear radiation. You wouldn't want to build your house on it, he says, but it's not a real threat to you in the way high levels of nuclear waste would be. He declined to elaborate on what an extreme situation is. Now, how does Larry Miller know? When he goes in to evaluate a company like Energy Solutions? Well, Larry Miller is owns one of the largest collections of automotive dealerships in the United States. And Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. And Miller Motorsports Park. And the Fans, two Z's, F-A-N-Z-Z, chain of sports apparel stores. So he knows from low-level nuclear waste, ladies and gentlemen, because he wants to have the money from the name. Now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Who's contributing most to global warming? Not emissions from factories and power plants, says the United Nations. Cattle. The increasing world population would lead to further increase in the number of livestock. Cattle are a major contributor to land degradation and pollution of water, says a UN report. The livestock business is among the most damaging sectors to the Earth's increasingly scarce water resources, contributing to water pollution from animal wastes, antibiotics and hormones, chemicals from tanneries, fertilizers, and the pesticides used to spray the crops grown for feed. Cattle rearing generates more global warming greenhouse gases as measured in carbon dioxide equivalent. The UN also calls for improved animal diets to reduce enteric fermentation and consequent emissions of methane. And warming climate could cause a sex imbalance in crocodiles, making it more difficult to find mates, according to a South African scientist. Dr. Allison Leslie from South Africa's University of Stellenbosch says crocodile gender is determined by embryo temperature during incubation. Higher temperatures could skew the sex ratio of populations. Ladies and gentlemen, some news of inspectors general, the kind of people that the Bush administration wants to zero out with regard to Iraq. Even New Orleans is adding one now. The city council approved funding for an inspector general's office that council members say is vital to ensure that programs and their funding, spawned in the wake of the flooding disaster, are properly administered. An existing inspector general says security procedures in key areas at the Los Alamos National Lab were non-existent, applied inconsistently, or not followed. The review by Inspector General Greg Friedman was written after police officers found drug paraphernalia and computer flash drives containing classified information inside the house of a former employee of a lab contractor. Friedman said the weaknesses in security procedures were especially troubling since the Energy Department has expended tens of millions of dollars upgrading various components of the lab security apparatus, including vast expenditures on cybersecurity. Another inspector general says army officials destroyed critical evidence that could have determined who shot and killed a private at an Iraqi checkpoint in May 2004, one of several problems with the friendly fire inquiry that may permanently shroud his death in mystery, according to Inspector General. And yet, the new chief of the U.S. General Services Administration is trying to limit the ability of that agency's inspector general to audit contracts for fraud or waste, and has said oversight efforts are intimidating the workforce. GSA Administrator Loretta Alexis Doane. Loretta Alexis Doane, a Bush political appointee and former government contractor, has proposed cutting $5 million in spending on audits and shifting responsibility for contract reviews to small, private audit contractors. She compared the Inspector General, Brian Miller, and his staff to terrorists, according to notes obtained by the Washington Post. Quote, there are two kinds of terrorism in the U.S., the external kind, and internally the Inspector Generals have terrorized the administrators, Doan said. The war on Inspectors General goes on, ladies and gentlemen. But good news from FEMA. Oh, yes. The FEMA Director David Paulison says it has made huge strides in the 15 months since the disaster. Paulison, a former firefighter. Don't laugh, people in Los Angeles. Some of them don't talk like that. Pointed to a series of organizational and procedural changes designed to clarify the roles of the various federal agencies. There's been little independent evaluation of FEMA's new actions to improve its response, despite Paulson's bullishness. The General Accountability Office said there is little information available on the extent to which these changes are operational. Paulson, in a speech, says all responses are local, but we no longer wait for local folks in the states to be overwhelmed before we step in. Unquote. Of course, that was what the National Response Plan of December 2004 said the Fed should do anyways, not wait, because in any big disaster, the state and the locals would be overwhelmed. And in what FEMA is doing currently, awarding a West Mobile, Alabama company a $6.2 million hurricane-related contract for boxed lunches last year. FEMA paid a stiff price and laid down almost no requirements. The firm that had the contract fought to keep the contract secret, but the Mobile Press Register got a hold of it. FEMA agreed to pay the company, Clearbrook, $14.85 per lunch. Boxed lunches, ladies and gentlemen. $14 boxed lunch. But FEMA did not spell out exactly what the firm was supposed to supply by way of food and drink. The only requirement was that it be non-perishable. Some of that non-perishable lunch. The contract specified the meals would be delivered to southwestern Louisiana in support of disaster relief efforts for Hurricane Katrina. Sorry, for Hurricane Rita. But the food was actually distributed in New Orleans. Aside from that, this is Lincoln. Everything at FEMA is just fine.
It's only been a week. The rush of being home and rapid fading, the failing to recall what I was missing all that time in England, the sent me aimlessly on foot or by the help of transportation to knock on windows where my friend no longer live. I have forgotten.
Speak for her. We don't normally tease upcoming features here on the broadcast because so often they don't pan out. But coming up in just a few moments, something pretty special for this holiday season. 18 spectacular gifts that will thrill everybody on your list for less than $4. You really want to... Okay, we have a call on the Newsmaker line, so we'll have to have the gift lady stand by. And let's take this call just because... Because it's on the Newsmaker line. Hello, you're on the air.
Harry Shearer.
Yes, guilty as charged.
Do you recognize this voice?
Let's see.
Yvonne De La Femina, Harry, how are you?
I was going to guess the guy from my insurance agency who was not allowing my claim for the kitchen flooding, but Yvonne!
Oh. Do you have good insurance, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good, good.
I don't have a good insurance person, but I have good insurance. That was the whole... Yvonne De La Femina, you you have been a not frequent, but occasional caller to this broadcast, and you, if I'm not mistaken, the first time we heard from you, you were the last female hostage left in Iraq.
That's right, Harry.
Way
I was over
when.
There doing an evening of Shirley Bassey music.
Ah, that's
the Hilton over there.
Yeah.
And you were so... I'll tell you, the interview you did with me really was instrumental in my... getting out of there, and I
think it was probably vocal more than instrumental, don't you think? Yvonne, in the intervening years, you've called us on occasion. First of all, you had had a sex change. You've gone through a couple more. What
the headlines really are, Harry? I was born a man. I had a sex change to become a woman. Wasn't completely satisfied as a woman. Had another successful operation. Became a fella again, and then. Personal, brouhahas, whatever, I became a woman again.
All right, so...
That's where it is right now.
I was just going to say, please don't take this the wrong way, but what are you right now?
I'm a lady. Very, very happy, strong lady, and...
Are you a big-boned lady?
Well, I'm a big, handsome woman.
Okay.
I've been described, and it's a wonderful time to be a woman, Harry. I really think... we may have our first lady president. It's a very exciting time to be a woman. Not always for me personally, but...
And are you still performing, Yvonne? And you were a musical...
Well, no, I'm not really performing, Harry. You know, I was a performer and I was an actress, or an actor now, you can say, even if you are a lady, you can say actor.
Yeah.
And
that's what a wonderful time it is that we live in.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you know this, Harry, but I was a little sidecar issue... I was the first person, the first artist at the Jack Ging Summer Theater to play both Professor Harold Hill and Marion the Librarian in The Music Man during the same run.
Wow.
And the only reason my string of performances ended a little abruptly was the stitches started to pull during the Wells Fargo number. And I had a bow out of the show. So yes, long story short, and maybe it'll pertain to a later conversation about why I'm calling. But I was a performer, and I haven't done it for quite some time now.
Hmm.
I sort of took a little bit of a hiatus and had kind of a bad relationship that I think made me stronger. I won't say nervous breakdown. Russian fellow that I was very thought we were really the wind beneath my wings for quite a while, and that didn't work out. And
what, your wings didn't need wind?
Well, just didn't turn out to be the one.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
And I suffered went through a little sad patch, but then and even thought I'd go back to being a man again for a while. That's how dark it got for
me. Wow.
And if my rainy day money hadn't been spent setting up my home office for my new career, I might have just gone ahead and done it. And I'm glad that I didn't. I think I spent the money very wisely and for the new business, you know, that I'm in now. And I don't want to make this a plug.
No, I don't normally do that.
Not at all.
Public radio here. But I have to ask you, Yvonne, because it's been a while since we talked, when you go to a doctor and say, I was a man, I'm now a woman, I want to become a man again. Does the doctor say that's going to be rough? Let's...
He just physically, the operation itself.
Yeah, I mean, does he say, does he try to discourage...
Talk me out of it.
Yeah, they try to talk you out of it, or does he just roll up his sleeves and say, let's go?
Well, I think when they see the determination in my eyes and how absolutely positive I am each time that this is the right thing for me, You can't argue with that.
Yeah.
You can't argue with that kind of belief and absolute confidence that you're just a man trapped in a woman's body, then a woman trapped in a man's body, and then a man trapped in a woman's body again. And if the doctor is compassionate, if he's read his oath, he's going to do the next series of operations. And fortunately, I've found wonderful, wonderful, compassionate medical help, mostly not in this country.
I was going to say, onshore or offshore, but yeah.
On land, but not in the continental United States.
Not in the 48.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But there's time. I think we're going to get there.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned your new direction in life. We might as well delve into that a little bit before we find out why you're calling. What is it that you're doing now, Yvonne?
I'm a life coach, Harry.
A life coach.
I'm telling you something. I've never felt so jazzed every day.
Are you using air quotes around that or not?
I am.
I sense
actually,
those. Yeah.
I'm just thrilled about it, and I think I'm doing some good in this darn world, and I'm pretty excited. And you know, one of the great things about being a life coach, apart from the helping of the people, is that you can pretty much do it over the phone. Which is great. I mean, I recently did two sessions while I was having an estrogen colonic, actually.
Wow.
My astrologist gives those.
Yvonne, let me ask you a question that I think is in the minds of most listeners. How did you prepare yourself? How does one prepare to be a life coach?
The largest part of the preparation, Harry, is just believing you have something to offer. Because really, you really don't need a license or anything.
No, I know.
And there's just some questions on the internet that I won't even say certificate. And the rest of it is sheer belief that your life experiences and the way you've led your life. You got to feel really good about how you led your life, really, Harry. And you've got to be able to communicate that to people who are really, really looking to you. It's not being a therapist, really, Harry. It's really practical help in making you a better you. And I don't mean you a better you. You're already a great you.
Thank you. Thank you. I work a little bit on me every day.
Work does not show. It's seamless.
Thank you. Thank you. When people come to you, Yvonne, and this is a delicate question again, but do you tell them about your history as a man/woman? And pardon my language, but a man...
No. Don't apologize.
Okay.
I hear this all the time. No, it's really not so much about me. You know, it's all about them. I try to keep the focus on them, you know?
So do you tell them anything about yourself?
No, I really don't want to overstep. I mean, I think that might be over the line a little bit. I tell them things about me in terms of follow my dream. You know, I did these things, and I don't think the specific. I don't really know how necessarily that would relate so much, you know? Maybe I should.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, when you give some advice and maybe a client, you call them clients?
Clients, right.
Yeah. Says, well, how do you know? And would you tell an anecdote from your own experience?
Well, sometimes I'll just be cute and just say, you're calling me, aren't you? No?
Yeah, that always works.
And maybe a little bit, I'll try to turn it on them a little bit and say, well, these are the kind of questions you've been asking people in your life that have gotten you in trouble.
Ah.
You know what I mean? I don't think it's so important that they know my psychosexual history.
Well, what about your theater history?
Well, that I do talk about. Because I think I've learned so much from playing in the theater or in a concert venue about how to project on stage the person you want to be and do. You know?
Yeah.
Because it's all about doing.
Yeah. And being.
And being.
Yeah. See, maybe I should be a life coach if I could.
You are in a way.
Well,
I listen to you every week.
Thank you. Now, so do you never take clients face-to-face? Pardon me again?
No, I don't. I never do. And you know what? Well, that is a very good thing because I think people are more relaxed and more open if you don't, you know, see them.
Yeah. Now, you don't... Again, pardon me, Yvonne, but I think that you've been so open with us over the years that I feel free to ask you these questions, but your preference for doing this over the phone has nothing to do with any, shall we say, anomalies in your personal appearance at this point?
No. Oh, my gosh, no, Harry. No, I think I'm looking great, better than ever, and It's more really about where I'm living is really not set up for that. And also, you really, I think that life, it's their people are all over the country. Really, none of them are in my area.
Ah.
All on the phone.
Oh, okay. Are you blonde or brunette now, or redhead? What's your look?
Strawberry blonde.
Strawberry blonde. That's so
right. Very short.
Mm.
Very kind of. Did you see Million Dollar Baby, the boxer in that?
No.
Yeah. I want to say Renelle Zegwiger.
Well, say it.
But I always want to say it.
Yeah.
I can't really say it right.
Yeah. No? Well, one of these days. So, Yvonne, you're calling for a specific reason, I guess.
Apart from just touching base with you again and just hearing, and it's so great.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just calling about, I know you probably are up on this area. You really are so in, know what's going on in the world. But all my children are having a transsexual character.
Really?
They're introducing a transsexual character. Zarf, Z-A-R-F.
This is the television soap opera, All My Children.
All My Children,
uh-huh.
MC.
Uh-huh.
That's how they refer.
I see.
You're a fan. Uh-huh. And they're having a transsexual character, introducing it for sweeps, which is interesting.
Huh.
And I just got to say, Harry, that I think it's kind of based on me. And you know what, Harry, I can't even get a reading.
So for the you're saying... Now, is this is a man who becomes a woman on the show?
Yes, man who becomes a woman.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they're keeping it really under, you know...
Under wraps?
Under wraps.
Yeah.
I know that feeling, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not just making this up. I have a couple of facts that can back me up. I was getting a pedicure not long ago, and my feet are in tubs of warm water next to a lovely... A woman, when you start to talk as you're sitting there waiting for your corns to soften or whatever. And I was sitting next, struck up a conversation with a young lady, wonderful young woman, Renee Markowitz Santiago.
Okay.
One seemingly lovely Jewish woman, married a Cuban fella, by the way. You know, we're talking, exchanging stories, we're sitting there.
Yeah.
And I ended up talking about my life story. I even showed her, Renee, pictures from my last sex change that I have on my cell phone.
Really?
Yes. And when she regained consciousness, Harry, she hadn't eaten lunch.
Mm.
I guess it was a little startling to see the pictures. She said to me, and again, remember the name, Renee Markowitz Santiago. She said to me that my story was the most mesmerizing story she ever heard. Long story short, I'm watching AMC, All My Children, and I see that Renee Markowitz Santiago is a writer on that show.
Oh, my God.
And I hear that they're doing this Zarf character. And it's also no coincidence that the name is Zarf, and I can explain that to you.
Yeah, please do, because that's not a normal-sounding name.
It's not a normal. Thank you.
For either man or woman.
Thank you.
All right.
And, Harry, what are those things, and I don't really have the big fancy East Coast education, but is it an anagram when the letters of a name mean other things?
You mean stand for something else?
Yes, Z-A-R-F.
No, that's not an anagram.
Okay. Well, that's... neither here nor there, really.
Okay.
Because if you go Zarf, and I told her all of this.
Yeah.
The name of the fellow who performed my last procedure is named Zoltan Asimov.
Yeah.
Z-A, right?
Yeah.
So, and R-F is registered pharmacist. He had been a surgeon in Sierra Leone.
Uh-huh.
Only become a pharmacist here.
Yeah.
Z-A-R-F.
But, Yvonne?
Yes.
Pharmacist is with a P.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, if they had done it exactly, the anagram, which is not an anagram.
Right.
Then that would have left them probably no wiggle room legally at all.
I see what you're saying. So they did that amount.
Okay, but I get the inside joke.
Okay.
I get it.
The name of the doctor again?
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
And he was practicing?
It's not really. He would be a doctor in his own native.
I understand.
Leone.
It's an odd name for Sierra Leone, but I'm following you.
I know that he was born there.
Okay, all right.
More about the medical stuff.
I see.
Pretty closed mouth guy.
Yeah.
Always seemed in a hurry.
Huh. Always?
Well, not when it counted.
Okay, good. So, Yvonne, you're not calling because you're going to sue or something, are you?
No, I'm not going to sue Harry any more than those young Afro-American, or is it African-American or black fellows that were so profoundly upset by Michael Richards that they may need a financial settlement.
Yeah.
I don't know. If not a reading, I certainly would like an explanation. And if that translated into a, it was explained financially to me, whatever.
Yeah. But when you say a reading, then so your first goal would be to be the playing the character on the show? Is that what
I would love it. I mean, God knows I have the chops.
Excuse me?
I certainly have, well, I've had many chops, but no, but I mean, you know what I mean. I certainly,
you mean the acting.
I am a performer, and I love the life coach thing, mm-hmm. but I also love to craft a character.
Yeah, well, who doesn't?
And the singing, of course, could mm-hmm. be fun.
Is there singing on All My Children?
No, but there could be if I played that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So have you, you've called the office and asked for an appointment or something like that?
Oh, yes, and I tried, and somehow Renee seems to be always out when I call.
Hmm.
She's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were there together, oh, God, half an hour,
uh-huh.
40 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're there so long, and your feet are out, and you talk, you know?
Yeah, there's a bond.
You never dreamed you're going to be your life, because I may want to use that, my own character, in some written piece of some kind.
Some theater piece?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But if you called, like, the casting office, have you, or just tried to call Renee?
Tried to call Renee, call the casting office, the executive producers, ABC, you know.
Disney?
Busy, what's it pertaining to. Very, very friendly,
yeah.
but distant.
Yeah.
Everybody's, I don't know, I'm sure you run into this all the time.
Hmm.
People are, you know, they get what they want and they move on.
Yeah.
Caravan moves on.
Caravan moves on. Yvonne, did any of them say, but the character is a man becoming a woman and you're right now a woman?
No, and that's a very good point. And I'm not saying it would be an easy rewrite, but boy, they do so many shows. It shouldn't be that, you know. And I'm not also saying that I wouldn't be willing to, you know.
Oh my God, really?
Well, no, but I'm certainly willing to talk.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, I see.
So
you're open. Pardon the expression again.
I am, and I think it might be more interesting starting as a woman anyway, but that, you know, I'm not going to tell them how to produce their show. I just think it might be certainly an open exchange of ideas.
So are you calling basically to ask me to, or just to use these microphones of the...
Well, to use your microphones to just say hello. You can't take a person's life and make daytime drama out of it without so much as a howdy do, hello, let's talk. Let's pay whatever.
Yeah. As you understand it, is this a character who has more than one sex change, or is that nobody knows because it's they're keeping the story?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I've told it how I've gone back and forth a couple of times.
Right.
And each time thought it was the right way to go, and was mm-hmm. for months.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're heading. Maybe they're going to be doing that as well.
Hmm.
It'd be nice to know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if not, at least I feel like I've gotten my voice out there just a bit.
Yeah, but possibly what you'd like is your pound of flesh. Pardon the expression again. I'm sorry. But...
Well, I just like a good hearing.
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people in the industry listen to this broadcast. Weirder things have happened than that you get a call from the people at All My Children.
Well, you know, this similar story happened to... a young Afro-American fellow who thinks that John Guare took his life in 6 degrees of separation, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know where that went, so I'm not sure what my point is. But look it up.
Okay. All right. Good. We have the internet at our disposal now, so we can do that. Yvonne, great to hear from you. Good luck with the life coaching. Do you have
Thank you, Harry, very, very much. And it's wonderful to speak to you again.
And great to speak to you. And
good luck with all your projects.
Thank you. And I hope that somebody from All My Children calls you.
Well, if they do, I'll certainly owe it to you.
And I hope this can be resolved in a friendlier way and that nobody needs to call Gloria Allred.
That's right. you don't have her number, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yvonne De La Femina, always a pleasure. And have a happy holiday.
Happy holiday to you, Harry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yvonne, our newsmaker line, ladies and gentlemen. Always open for newsmakers here on the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Portland, Oregon. The federal government has agreed to pay Oregon lawyer Brandon Mayfield $2 million to settle part of the lawsuit he filed because of his mistaken arrest by FBI agents after the Madrid terrorist bombings. Mayfield was arrested in Portland on the basis of a fingerprint that was incorrectly matched to him after the train bombings. He was jailed on a material witness warrant and released 2 weeks later. The government admitted in the settlement it performed covert physical searches of the home and law office and also conducted electronic surveillance targeting Mayfield at both his home and law office. The FBI and the Justice Department repeatedly apologized for the arrest, and the government did so once again this week as part of the settlement. Germany's Conservative Party is giving a legislator a second chance after he apologized for statements insulting to Jews in Germany. Henry Nietzsche, how many clues do you need? A Bundestag representative from the Christian Democratic Union Party said at a party meeting in June that Germany needs more patriotism, quote, to finally get out of this cult of guilt so the country will never again be run again, by multicultural fags in Berlin, unquote. The Central Council of Jews in Germany accused Nietzsche of using the vocabulary of the far-right National Democratic Party. He apologized Thursday, saying that, quote, in hindsight, I have to declare that the words I chose were worse than ambiguous, sorry, unquote. That's a phrase Michael Richards might have made use of. The head of the National Democratic Party congratulated Nietzsche on his original statement and offered him membership. City officials in Arizona, Tempe, Arizona, have apologized after a program on the local cable channel showed a white police officer telling two black men they could get out of a littering ticket by performing a rap. Tempe Mayor Hugh Hallman and Police Chief Tom Ritt apologized for the show Thursday and suspended its future production after black community leaders voiced outrage and disappointment. The segment on Tempe Street Beat that followed several officers on patrol showed Sergeant Chuck Scoville pulling over two men in August in a mall parking lot. He first asked for a name and ID from the driver and then asked the two men if they know how much the fine is for littering. The officer then tells the men they can avoid getting a littering ticket. Quote, if the two of you just do a little rap about... What do you want to do a rap about? Littering? About the dangers of littering? Unquote. The two men agree and each performs a short rap, laughing afterwards. And yet, outrage and disappointment, ladies and gentlemen. See if this sounds familiar. Fort Worth Bishop Kevin Vann apologized this week for the sexual abuse committed by priests who formerly worked in the diocese. He described himself as embarrassed, disheartened, appalled, and angered at the material described in court records, showing Fort Worth Catholic Diocese leaders systematically helping predator priests stay in the ministry for two decades by concealing information from parishioners, police, and the public, the three P's. The News of the World newspaper in Britain publicly apologized this week to members of the royal family for invading their privacy after a senior journalist admitted a plot to hack into their personal phone calls. The unreserved apology from the paper's editor, Andy Coulson, and its royal correspondent, Clive Goodman, came as a court heard details of a phone-tapping operation targeting both royals and celebrities. Uh-oh. Cancel my phone bill. And the phone. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A couple more. Michael Vick, NFL player, apologized in a written statement for making a obscene hand gesture toward fans with both hands following the loss of his Atlanta Falcons, the Dirty Birds, to the New Orleans Saints. He vowed never to make the same mistake. It's a good idea, babe. Such a world full of new mistakes to make. And the Australian Wheat Board has apologized for its illicit dealings with the corrupt regime of Saddam Hussein. Don Rumsfeld might now admire those dealings. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, shortwave. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived whenever you want it on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like more administration memos on Iraq becoming public if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Hey, my thanks to the people who showed up at the Pomona book signing last night as well. That was a B-A-L-L. Book? What book? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. And to the divine Miss O for musical guidance. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. You folks in New York City and Philadelphia, the Harry and Judith or Judith and Harry Christmas sing-along moves to your cities in Sellersville, Pennsylvania on the 14th and in New York City on the 15th. And judging by last weekend in San Francisco, a good time turns out to be had by all. Word to the wise, don't be stupid. Why am I talking to people in New York? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.